It's just after 10 p.m. on July 9th, 1864, at Hackney Station in East London. A young bank clerk sprints along the platform, his boots hammering against the stone. Beside him, a colleague struggles to keep pace. Both men have spent a long day at the office, and neither wants to miss the train home. Steam rises from the waiting locomotive, and ahead, the station master raises a whistle to his lips and blows hard. Just as the train begins to move, two clerks leap into an empty first-class compartment. Out of breath and grinning, they burst into relieved laughter and sink back into the cushioned seats, because now at last they can relax. But it's just then when one of them realizes his hand is wet. Lifting it up in the dim light of the compartment, he sees his fingers are covered in blood. He jumps to his feet, because it's not just his hands. His pants and coat are smeared with blood, too. In fact, as he looks around, the clerk sees that the entire compartment is splattered. In shocked silence, the other young man points to an open leather bag that's been abandoned in the corner and a gentleman's walking cane on the floor. Beside the cane is a crumpled beaver felt hat. For a moment, neither man says a word. Something terrible has happened here, and recently too, but whoever the victim was, they're gone, and so is their attacker. The two clerks have stumbled upon something monumental. The blood-stained compartment is the scene of Britain's first railroad murder. This violent crime will spark a national panic, launch a transatlantic manhunt, and transform the way train companies protect their passengers, and the modern age of transportation in Britain will never be the same after its first great murder mystery begins in East London on July 9, 1864. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is July 9, 1864, the first convicted train murderer. It's 10:20 p.m. on July 9, 1864, near Bow in East London, only a few minutes after the bank clerks discovered a murder scene. Train engineer Alfred Eakin leans out the side of the cab as his locomotive rattles through the darkness. The evening is warm and still. Alfred's last passengers left the train at the previous station, and he's making the routine return journey toward Fenchurch Street, accompanied only by his fireman and a conductor. Alfred slows down as he approaches a bend and a bridge over the canal beyond. None of this infrastructure existed just a few decades ago, but London, much like Britain, has been transformed by the railroads. The first public steam railroad opened in 1825, and the British were quick to embrace the new technology. Now, an entire railroad network crisscrosses the country. The economy, society, even the landscape itself have all been reshaped by the locomotive. Trains now carry millions of passengers every year, and thousands of men like Alfred Eakin are employed to keep the system moving. Most of Alfred's shifts pass without incident, but tonight, as he nears the bridge, something catches Alfred's eye. A dark shape lies motionless in the ditch between the two sets of tracks. For a moment, Alfred thinks it's just a bundle of rags that is blown onto the line. But as the train slowly draws closer, the shape becomes unmistakable. It's a person. Alfred immediately applies the brakes. The locomotive grinds to a halt, and Alfred shouts for his conductor to come help. Together, they climb down from the train and approach the body. Alfred kneels down and sees that it's an unconscious elderly man. Blood covers his face, one eye is swollen shut, and his jacket is torn and stained. But remarkably, he's still breathing. The conductor rushes toward a nearby pub to summon help, and within minutes, he returns with several local men. Together, they carefully lift the injured stranger off the ground and carry him back to the pub, where they lay him across a table in the back room. Someone sends for a doctor, but it's a police officer who arrives first. The officer searches the injured man's pockets. He finds letters, keys, several coins, a silver snuff box, and a silk handkerchief. The letters reveal that the injured man is Thomas Briggs, the chief clerk at a London bank, and he lives at an address in Hackney. As one of the locals is sent to give word to the victim's family, the doctor appears and is shown into the back room. But there's little he can do. Thomas has suffered catastrophic skull injuries. But it's clear to the doctor that this was no accident. The bruising on his arms and hands suggest a struggle. The doctor theorizes that Thomas was attacked on the train and then either fell from the compartment or was pushed onto the tracks. The doctor does what he can to make Thomas comfortable, and then he's transported to his home in Hackney. But he never recovers consciousness, and Thomas dies the following day with his family at his bedside. A murder investigation is launched immediately. And it doesn't take the police long to link Thomas Briggs to the mysterious bloodied compartment found at Hackney Station. Thomas's family confirms that he was the owner of the abandoned bag and cane found at the scene. But the crumpled beaver felt hat is a mystery to them. It's certainly nothing like the hats Thomas wore. For the police, this realization is electrifying, because if the hat didn't belong to Briggs, then perhaps it belongs to the killer. Newspapers across Britain seize on the story because there's never been a murder on the railroads before. And the idea that a respectable banker could be attacked inside a first-class compartment horrifies and fascinates Victorian society. Suddenly, the safety of every passenger on the railroad seems a little less certain, and the government pushes for a swift arrest. Responsibility for the case falls to 31-year-old newly promoted Detective Inspector Richard Tanner. His task is simple in theory. He must identify the owner of a hat, and in doing so, catch a killer. Tanner's first move is to search for Thomas Briggs' stolen property. Briggs always carried an expensive watch on a heavy gold chain, but there's been no sign of it since the attack. Notices describing the missing items appear all over London, and soon they will produce a lead. Within 48 hours, a jeweler will come forward with a story that will give Inspector Tanner a suspect and set in motion one of the most extraordinary manhunts of the Victorian age. It's July 11, 1864 in London, 2 days after Thomas Briggs was discovered on the train tracks near Bow. Detective Inspector Richard Tanner pushes open the door of a jeweler's shop and introduces himself to the proprietor, the grimly named John Death. Tanner has spent the morning chasing leads, and most have gone nowhere. But he hopes this visit will be different. The jeweler contacted the police earlier today, claiming to have some of Thomas Briggs' missing property. And as soon as Tanner heard, he raced across the city to see what John Death has to show him. John reaches beneath the counter and produces a gold watch chain. Tanner picks it up. The chain is solid and old-fashioned, but clearly expensive, and perfectly matches the description of Thomas Briggs' missing watch chain. He asks John how it came into his possession. John explains that it was brought into his shop earlier that day by a young customer with a foreign-sounding accent. The man wanted to exchange it and quickly picked out a more modern-looking chain. That was worth less than the original, so he chose a 5-shilling ring to make up the difference. John packed up the items in a small cardboard box and didn't think much more about it until he saw a notice about the Briggs case in the newspaper. After reading that, he reconsidered his customer's behavior, got in touch with the police. Tanner asks about the young man's appearance, but John's answers are frustratingly vague. The customer was fair-haired and respectably dressed, but he can't remember much more than that. It's not a lot to go on, but still it's the strongest lead Tanner has found so far. He takes the gold chain as evidence and shows it to Thomas Briggs' family. They confirm it belonged to the dead man. That solves one mystery, but it doesn't take Tanner much closer to finding the killer. There must be hundreds, even thousands of men in London who match the mysterious young man's description, and Tanner has limited tools to narrow down the search. In the 1860s, there are no fingerprints to compare, no forensic laboratories to consult, and no central criminal databases to check. Cases usually hinge on a witness remembering a face or on a stranger deciding to come forward with a scrap of information. This means a detective's job is often a matter of hard work, patience, and mere luck. So for 10 days, Tanner pounds the streets of London searching for the killer. Newspapers follow every small development, and rewards for information are announced by Briggs's employers at the bank, the North London Railway, and even the government itself. Still, there's no sign of a breakthrough until late in the evening of July 18th, a cab driver walks into a police station in central London saying he has some information he thinks might be valuable. He tells the officers that he has a cardboard jewelry box at home stamped with the name John Death. It was given to his young daughter by a German friend of his, a 23-year-old tailor named Franz Müller. Tanner immediately hurries over to the police station. A young German tailor would certainly fit the description given, but he needs more evidence than that. So he shows the cab driver the crumpled beaver hat recovered from the train compartment. The cab driver recognizes it immediately. It belongs to his friend, Franz Müller. With that, two separate strands in the investigation snap together, and Detective Tanner has just what he needs, a good suspect. Tanner gets an address for Franz Müller, but no one is home when he goes there. The neighbors haven't seen him for days, and neither have his employers. It seems Tanner's suspect has fled. But now that he has his man, Tanner has no intention of giving up the chase. Travel records reveal that just days after the murder, Franz Müller bought passage on the Victoria, a ship bound for New York. Tanner knows that if Franz reaches America, the chances of ever tracking him down will be slim. The United States is vast, and it would be easy for a young man to disappear there. But all is not lost. The Victoria is not a modern steam-powered vessel. It's a traditional sailing ship, and it will take weeks for it to cross the Atlantic. If Tanner can move quickly enough, he might just beat his suspect to America. But he can't just jump on the next steamship heading for New York. If he's to arrest Franz Müller, he'll need a warrant. And to get a warrant, he'll need to present a compelling case to a magistrate. Tanner will be in a race against time. He will tear across London, collecting witness statements and evidence, knowing that with every hour that passes, Franz Müller's head start will only grow. It's August 5th, 1864, in New York City, just over 2 weeks after Detective Inspector Richard Tanner identified a suspect for the murder of Thomas Briggs. Tanner stands on the waterfront and scans the horizon. Franz Müller's ship, the Victoria, is nowhere to be seen. It's been delayed crossing the Atlantic, plagued by bad winds and rough seas, and that stroke of luck has allowed Tanner to overtake his suspect. Having secured a warrant from a London magistrate, Tanner made the crossing aboard a modern steamship. Less dependent on the wind, he arrived in New York well before Franz, and now he's alerted the local authorities and presented his warrant. All he can do now is wait. But the United States is in the middle of a civil war. The situation in New York is chaotic, with people coming and going every day. Tanner knows that if Franz manages to slip past him, he could disappear forever. Weeks pass in anxious anticipation with no sign of the Victoria. Tanner stays in a hotel near the docks, monitoring arrivals, until finally, on August 24th, word reaches him that the ship has been sighted. As the vessel approaches New York Harbor, American police officers assemble on the docks. Along with Tanner, the officers board the Victoria and arrest Franz Müller before he can even set foot on American soil. Franz insists he's innocent, but a search of his belongings soon reveals the truth. Among his luggage is Thomas Briggs's missing gold watch. Extradition proceedings begin immediately. Tanner braces for a diplomatic headache because relations between Britain and the United States are tense, and extradition is a relatively new legal process. Tanner spends days presenting evidence to the American authorities until at long last the paperwork is approved. On September 3, 1864, Tanner sails back to England with his quarry under armed guard. A few weeks later, Franz Müller is put on trial in London for the murder of Thomas Briggs. The prosecutor's case is entirely circumstantial. No one actually saw the attack on Thomas Briggs, and no one can place the defendant inside the compartment. Instead, they build their argument on the hat, the stolen watch, and the chain, and the trail Franz left as he fled the country. But the defense fights back. Franz's lawyers suggest another man may have attacked Briggs and presents evidence that Müller was elsewhere in London on the night of the murder. But the jurors are unconvinced. After deliberating for just 15 minutes, they return a verdict of guilty. On the morning of November 14, 1864, thousands gather outside Newgate Prison in London to watch Franz Müller's execution. After months of denying responsibility, he admits to his crime only moments before the trapdoor opens beneath his feet and he's left hanged at the end of a rope. For some, this case would confirm all their fears about the new railroad technology, that it brings people from different classes into unnaturally close contact and is fundamentally unsafe. But the railroad companies will try to ease those concerns with new railcar designs and safety features. Trains will continue to connect every corner of Britain, bringing with them new opportunities for travel, business, and crime, as Thomas Briggs discovered in the most terrible way on July 9, 1864. Next on History Daily, July 10, 1962. The world's first active communications satellite is launched into space. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Mohammed Shazi. Sound design by Molly Bach. Music by Thrum. This episode is written and researched by Olivia Jordan. Edited by William Simpson. Managing producer, Emily Burr. Executive producers are William Simpson for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.